Morning, everyone. Thank you for this welcome, and I'm pleased to be your surprise guest speaker. No, no, just be standing up there. So today's presentation is really about the Colorado Health Service Corps, and I'm going to be joined in my presentation by the program manager, Amber Galloway Stevens. The activities, the names are similar but not the same. If we have a few minutes, because the missing speaker will fill you in on that relationship. We are a program at the State Health Department in Colorado that really focuses on the intersection of primary care and public health activities. And I realize that I haven't read my disclosure, but neither me or my co-author has any relationships to disclose with regard to this presentation. So as I started to say, the primary care offices are really the intersection of public health and personal health care delivery, particularly around the needs of underserved populations. Primary care offices are funded by the Health Resources and Services Administration, and most grantees are state health departments throughout the country. All 50 states have a primary care office in each of the four territories. In our base grant from HRSA, we really have two primary base functions. One is to the assessment of need for health professional shortage areas and medically underserved areas. That is, in essence, a population to provider ratio that compares what appropriate staffing would be for a service area versus that that would not. Health professional shortage areas are really declarations of acute need. It's not simply that an area is a doctor short or less than that. It typically means that an area is probably about half the capacity they would actually need to appropriately respond to the healthcare needs of a community. That shortage designation is really the basis for a lot of our different activities, both inside public health and outside. It's the primary federal declaration of need for a community, and there are about 36 different federal programs at last count that use health professional shortage areas or medically underserved areas either to determine eligibility for federal funding or to rank competitiveness for funding on a national scale. And again, it's really a need-focused assessment. There are some attributes of community health status that are included in those designations, but it's a rather minor part. The other activity that's primarily a function of primary care offices is that we promote and administer certain kinds of incentive programs that draw health professionals into underserved communities. So once that designation is made, we make an effort to bring those providers in through various incentive programs, and that's the primary focus of today's discussion. And I'm going to let Amber discuss with you the overview.
Hi, everyone. I'm Amber Galloway Stevens. I'm the Workforce Programs Manager at the Primary Care Office. So Steve talked to you about our core function, which is designation of healthcare professional shortage areas within our state. And then also we drive incentive programs to those areas, basically to recruit and retain healthcare professionals in those medically underserved areas. So our most successful and our largest program to do that is called Colorado Health Service Corps, which is our state loan repayment program. It's administered directly by our office. It is a federally funded program, but we've been very successful in attracting a lot of private dollars to that program. So I believe at this point that we are the largest state loan repayment program in the nation. So as I mentioned, this is a state-administered primary care loan repayment program. It's an incentive for healthcare providers to serve the medically underserved areas of our state and people of our state, and we are defining medically underserved as basically people who are uninsured, underinsured, publicly insured, etc. Essentially, if you have absolutely no insurance whatsoever, these specific providers and sites will provide services on a sliding fee scale based on income. The benefits of the state loan repayment program are available. I should be clear that this is a clinically based program. It's for direct clinical care provision. And the benefits are really available to various different physicians, nurses, oral and mental health professionals that are all practicing primary care. It is similar to a national program called the National Health Service Corps, and the funding comes from the Health Resources and Service Administration. So although both programs are very analogous, hence the similar names, we've intentionally really tried to craft our state program to be different than the national program. The national program really tends to focus on acute need, and really what we've tried to do in our state is focus on long-term provider retention with the provision of primary care in our medically underserved areas. So historically, this was a very, very small program. It brought in probably 6 healthcare providers per year, and the problem was that there was no state appropriation whatsoever for the program. So these already disenfranchised communities serving the medically uninsured and publicly insured of our state had to actually come up with the matching funds, because there is a dollar-for-dollar requirement. So as you can imagine, it was almost a defunct program because people, really these sites and these communities couldn't come up with the match. So really, as I mentioned, there are very few opportunities to match the federal funds. So it wasn't much of a program when it came to us in 2009. Really, there was a lack of coordination among other incentive efforts in our state. There were 6 distinctive loan repayment programs focusing on various different things, but as you can imagine, that's really very confusing to a healthcare professional, and I think essentially that it was just like they didn't even want to bother with trying to figure out which program would be best for them. So really what we've done is we've tried to, historically, really the emphasis was on the provider debt rather than the actual public health need in the area. So it was larger awards for fewer healthcare professionals, and we've tried to be very intentional on sort of spreading the wealth to increase the number of providers rather than just saturating all of the debt. There was little collaboration among interested state organizations in that they were operating these 6 different programs sort of in silos in very different ways with different focuses and not a clear sort of consistent message. So we had some legislation that came about in 2009 and 2010, and what that statute did is it established, or those statutes I should say, they established the primary care office, our office, as actually a function, a state function in statute. It also expanded the breadth and the frequency of needs assessments in that it gave some state appropriations to our health professional area shortage designation process, so we got some state money to actually do that. It did transfer the administrative responsibility from that state loan repayment program that I mentioned previously that was basically defunct to our office, the primary care office. And then it also renamed and sort of rebranded the program as the Colorado Health Service Corps. We also were afforded some adjustments in our state procurement and contracting requirements to sort of better accommodate our needs. We got some waivers and things of that nature to make it more administratively not as burdensome, if you will. We were able to pay up front and contract in a very different way than a state's usually typically accustomed to. And with that, I'm going to turn this over to Steve to talk to you about the results of that consolidation and all that statute.
So that's a lot of the background. Really, we count a lot of the success of our program in this consolidation effort that really created what I think is best described as a public-private partnership. As of today, about 60% of our funding comes from foundation sources. We also have, as Amber mentioned, increased the amount of state funding, and we've increased our federal match potential as a result as well. One of the things that we didn't do is disenfranchise the previous stakeholders that had been invested in these other loan repayment incentive activities in the state. One of the strategies that we used to sort of maintain that historical expertise in administration of these programs and also sort of skin in the game, so to speak, in terms of the process was that we created an advisory council that was that is appointed by the governor. And allows members of the State Primary Care Association, which is our federally qualified health center state association, our State Office of Rural Health, our AHEC organization, area health education centers, as well as some foundations and other interested providers and organizations that all come together and help us select our candidates. So in effect, we've been able to create a program that was traditionally, at any one time, had maybe 6 new providers that would come in per year for a 2-year agreement. So we'd have about 12. We are just preparing to cross the threshold of about 220. And as of probably this month, our state-based program is now larger than National Health Service Corps in Colorado. So our state efforts have exceeded the national efforts with respect to our state. We are currently granting about $3.6 million a year in loan repayment. But again, philosophically, one of the important things to me and our program staff was to orient the program sort of away from thinking of provider debt as the objective and trying to tackle that debt problem, but instead to start thinking about it as a strategy. And it's really a strategy to induce people into underserved communities. But one of the ways that we decided we also wanted to distinguish this program from the National Health Service Corps, as Amber mentioned, the Corps at the national level tends to focus on areas of highest need. So in years when funding is lean, they only look at the health professional shortage areas that have the most dire need for new health professionals. It's an important strategy that should be maintained, and our objective was simply just to have something that was complementary but distinctive, that we weren't just tackling the same problem in the same way. So our state program really focuses on the retention attributes of the candidate. Our philosophy is that if we can find and select four candidates in our application pool who are most committed to those communities, most likely to serve beyond their service commitment to the state, that we'll maybe be successful in having more resilient solutions to health professional shortages in our state. I think those of you who are familiar with these kind of programs are aware that often the ding on a loan repayment program is that it's a fairly temporary fix. You'll receive a physician or a nurse who will work in your clinic for 2 years or 3 years or 4 years. Once their debt has been retired, they tend to leave. So we've set as a goal that we want to have a higher retention rate than the National Health Service Corps, not because we're naturally competitive, but because it'll be sort of an affirmation that our philosophy was the right one. One of the ways we intend to calculate that is what is the cost per retention year. So if we, for example, spend $30,000 on a three-year contract, the cost per retention year is about $10,000. If that provider says 6 years, then the cost per retention year is about $5,000. So we will continue to track these providers even after the contractual obligation with us is complete. And the objective is the cheaper per retention year, the more effective we've been in our program. But we don't want to stop there. I think that was sort of the first half of the natural history of this program. The second half is sort of a new vision. How am I doing on time?
5 minutes.
5 minutes, okay. So the second vision is to really think about the heart and soul of public health. We're all public health professionals. And I think we all realize that clinical care is very important to underserved communities, but it's really sort of the strategic response to health inequity. In and of itself, it's not quite health equity in my mind. So access equity is the response that we in public health care about, but I think we can all appreciate that we can do more upstream as public health professionals. So I mentioned that we focus on retention and strategy, but moving on, I should mention that this was one of the methods that we used to attract some of our private money into the program. So as I mentioned earlier, that we had six different foundation programs around the state that were funding loan repayment independently. But one of the things that I think is important to appreciate is that loan repayment dollars are taxable income. So a foundation might give a dollar, for example, into a loan repayment program. There's always going to be administrative costs looking for looking after those providers and those contracts. And then there's a state and federal tax liability. And so the net benefit to a foundation independently administering a loan repayment program is about 59 cents on the dollar. One of the things we discovered was just some basic addition. State-administered programs, per the Affordable Care Act, can deliver that loan repayment incentive without creating a tax liability to the provider. So we also anticipate the same administrative costs in the state program, but that independent dollar invested also makes us eligible to compete for federal matching dollars. Without the tax liability, the net incentive to the provider is about $1.82 for that state investment. So the benefits of that public-private partnership, I think, are very clear, particularly from a funder standpoint. So those of you who are in states that have an active philanthropy community and might be associated or working with a program similar to this one, this is the clearest case you can possibly make that a foundation should be giving government money to administer a program, because we just happen to be a very cost-effective means for delivering that mission. Mentioned, I think I've already covered, the shift in our strategy from retention versus acute shortage. But I think the final point that I'd like to conclude on is that this is not my quote, but I think it's an important one, that because an aspirin resolves fever, lack of aspirin must be the cause of fever. I think we can all appreciate that that's really a misfire in logic. So the attitude and the application, I think, to the point of this program is that health inequity does not emerge from access inequity. It's really the other way around. So how do we respond to the health equity needs of our community by delivering medical access? This is the definition of the social determinants that we like and use, and our social determinants manager is in the back here, and I've learned quite a bit from her. But social determinants of health are life-enhancing resources such as food, housing, economic and social relationships, transportation, education, and healthcare, whose distribution across populations effectively determines life, length, and quality. So how do we get a clinical program oriented towards these kinds of activities? With these 220 providers that we have spread throughout the state working in clinical settings that are by design meeting the needs of medically underserved populations, we know that these populations are being disparately impacted by these social determinants. Physicians, nurses, dentists, and mental health workers have a great deal of credibility in their community. And if they've transplanted into a rural area or in a low-income urban area, that credibility is actually a very valuable asset that we can use in public health to speak on behalf of public health strategies. So now that they're in the program, we're buying their clinical service time. We're going to ask for a few percentage of that professional time to engage in more population-based community and public health kinds of activities. So we intend to deliver some training to those providers in traditional public health and population-based strategies. We'll be using our state school of public health to do that. Once they receive that training, we'll actually ask them to report to us twice a year. We're going to ask those providers to even identify very specific things in their clinical practice that has a social determinants context. So, for example, if a dentist is drilling a lot of teeth in kids in his dental practice, we'd like to be able to get that dentist talking about community water fluoridation. So we know that about half of oral health disease in children is directly attributable to whether they drink fluoridated water or not. And traditionally, the CDC can show up with a water fluoridation engineer, or the state health department can show up and give this advice, but we don't have the same kind of community-level credibility that a dentist or a hygienist or a pediatrician says, we shouldn't be drilling these teeth, we should be preventing them. So we want to capitalize on that strategy. And then thirdly and lastly, and I'll conclude with this, is that we'd like our 220 Colorado Health Service Corps providers to be training the next generation of providers who are seeking service in underserved communities. The idea is that they're going to be delivering specific clinical and professional training, but they're also going to be a mentor in a model for someone who maybe is midway through medical school, they've chalked up $150,000, $200,000 in debt, and they went in thinking that they wanted to serve the medical needs of underserved communities, but they look at that debt and say, maybe I should be a dermatologist because I can sure pay down that loan very quickly in a more lucrative specialty. We have an example of a preceptor in a community who's sort of followed that path that they chose initially. It's an example of someone who had pretty substantial loan repayment dollars made available to them to do that clinical service. Somebody who's been trained in a community and public health context to sort of be the example and draw in the next generation into the community. So with that, I will conclude. Thank you.
Thank you very much.